In this episode, you're going to learn not just how to set goals and achieve them, but how to stack rank the different levers from a math perspective. And so you can prioritize which ones to actually use first to make your life easier to hit those goals as well.
One of the things that I used to see a lot working on the client side is I would have clients come to me and they would say, okay, the exec board has come to me and said, we need to achieve XYZ revenue goal. And then they would say, I want to do X, Y, and Z strategies to achieve that. But they've never actually reverse engineered what needs to be true to make that goal happen. So what ends up happening is they throw a bunch of spaghetti at the wall. None of it works. And they waste a ton of budget. And at the end of the year, the exec board's annoyed. They're annoyed. Everybody's upset. So there's a need for a more scientific approach for sure.
I love the kitchen reference with the spaghetti. Thank you for that.
Got the right ingredients for revenue growth. A pinch of effort and a dash of hope won't cut it anymore. Grab your utensils. You're about to get some high-performing marketing recipes. Welcome to Client Boost Kitchen.
So, in this episode, really three key things that you're going to be learning. So number one, scientific approach for setting realistic marketing goals based on data-driven benchmarks. So super important one there. We're also going to be showing you how to reverse engineer your goal and diagnose what needs to be true to achieve it. And then at the end, we're also going to introduce you to a simple, effective goal tracking system that helps you understand whether you're on track or off track and need to pivot. Those are the three key things, really. I think a few other things as well. So a big one is just, I think, isolating growth levers. So again, coming back to, you know, that spaghetti on the wall reference, is a lot of marketers won't actually analyze, okay, what are the specific growth levers that we have to pull? How will pulling those different growth levers influence the goal that we're trying to achieve? And what resources do we need to actually have to be able to pull those different levers? And I think by doing that more scientific approach, you can be much more strategic in terms of how you allocate resources to get the best return on investment too.
I think I agree with you. And as we go to the next slide too, well, I've seen this happen again and again. It happens within Client Boost as well too. A client isn't on track with their goal. Everybody says all hands on deck, which is obviously a massive amount of wasted resources and added stress that's unnecessary. And I think what you're going to show now is going to be, where is the bottleneck that is the biggest one? And also from the ability to unlock that with the least amount of effort as well too. So why don't you walk us through this?
Yeah, for sure. So we always start any kind of goal setting exercise with data-driven baseline setting. And this will look a little bit different for every B2B. So I've used kind of a very standard B2B sales funnel that most B2Bs probably have, are either using or have at least some familiarity with.
Replace your CRM stages with any of these other stages and you should be able to use this just fine.
Yeah, exactly. And you can also add other ones in there. I know there's some companies that have 17 different touch points that they like to track. So what we do here is we've just kind of essentially just mapped out all the different stages of our kind of B2B buyer journey here. And then what we're looking at is three core things. We're looking at what's the volume at each stage, what's the cost per acquisition, and then also what's the conversion rate. And what we can do with this is, one, it just gives us a realistic understanding of, okay, how are we performing right now? Because I think, as the saying goes, the best predictor of, you know, future behavior is past behavior, right? So that's why we set these baselines. It's the best way to understand how we're performing. But then what's really cool is we can start looking at and tweaking the different kind of like conversion rates, different CPAs, different volume levels. And that will allow us to understand what needs to be true to then achieve an end goal, right? So if the board comes to us and says, we want to increase that volume of closed 1 to 36, we know that if we increase that conversion rate between the website traffic and the leads to 6%, that's just one example of a lever that we can pull to allow us to actually do that.
And then I think too, having, you know, this version very easily set up in Google Sheets from a dynamic calculator perspective as well too, that it helps you if you have different team members in charge of different things within the marketing, you know, funnel. What are their specific goals that they're trying to achieve? Like you just mentioned, going from a 3 to 6% of website traffic to leads. That could be tough, might not be, but again, what resources do you have to make that happen as well too? And not just say, let's just add more budget, because I think that's a very inefficient mindset of doing it. And it also depends on, are you happy with your cost per acquisition of your closed won customers as well too? Most companies, they aren't, right? So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you're looking at it at too much of a macro level like that, it can be very easy to say, okay, we're getting X conversion rate here. So in theory, if we double the budget, we should get double the pipeline. And, you know, I know this because I've seen it 1,000 times doing client work, is that whenever that gets enacted, it's rarely the case that pipeline scales as linearly as the increase in budget, right? And I think the other thing that I would like to add there as well is, you kind of alluded to, you know, do you need more budget? I think this is one of the strong POVs that I have. I actually think most B2Bs are probably wasting ludicrous amounts of budget. And I think to some of the recent changes we've made on our own marketing recently, where we've kind of shrunk the marketing budget a little bit, and we have not seen a decrease in inbound. We've actually seen an increase in qualified inbound while decreasing the budget, because we knew there were efficiency savings that we could put into that. And you can, again, you can only do that when you're kind of like not focusing on that macro level, and you come into the more kind of micro level.
Yep. And again, like this seems simple, but I think a lot of people haven't done the exercise. And we can say that with a level of confidence, because we have a lot of sales conversations with new potential clients, right? So, take a moment, map this out, figure out where those opportunities are as well too. And you can see the difference between what marketing is responsible for with the red box that you have right here, and then also what sales can be responsible for as well too. And many times, if your go-to-market strategy is, you know, holistic as it should be, then the things that make your performance and better for the marketing side should also lead to better performance of conversion rates on the sales side as well too.
Yeah, exactly right. So I think that's an important part of when we're doing this kind of like isolating the growth levers exercise, is that we can say, okay, if we need to, you know, double this conversion rate from website traffic to lead volume, that's fine if we do that. But that alone isn't necessarily going to lead to the increase in closed won that we might want at the end of it, right? We've got to do that. And then we've got to also do it in a way that maintains the lead to MQL conversion rate, maintains MQL to SQL conversion rate. And if we don't do it in that way, we actually, you know, could increase the, you know, top of funnel conversion rate without actually having a positive impact on the bottom. So I think that's also the important part. You've got to, that kind of allows you to then analyze, okay, if we're going to, you know, implement a specific program that's going to help us increase that conversion rate, how do we do so in a way that doesn't impact those bottom of funnel metrics too? And I think that's the part where this may seem like a really simple exercise, but that's kind of the beauty of it as well, because it allows you to look at it from that, I guess, more effective perspective.
Yep. And I think too, this gave me an idea. If you go back to the previous slide, you have the conversion rates, you have the dollar amount, you have the volume. Those three things from a triangle perspective, usually like then again, ladder up to your overall budget of what you can expect as well. We should do an exercise, probably create a calculator as well too, like another episode, just going more in depth on that and starting with maybe the core business objective as like the North Star, and then waterfall down and almost reverse engineer, you know, this funnel right now and flip it, and then show people what they can max afford per cost per click, for example, cost per lead, cost per MQL, and then have that as a model as well too for them.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, to go off on another tangent there, that's, I think, another area where a lot of companies are just only having the conversation of, how low can we push at cost per acquisition, when actually sometimes a better conversation might be to say, what's the max we can afford to pay to acquire a customer? And then that's going to have, you know, bigger long-term implications on performance.
Yep. And you keep trying to shave down that customer acquisition cost, you're going to eventually suffocate volume, as we've all seen and felt as well too. And it's not really a growth level mindset, I would say, either in terms of what you just said. Figure out your max customer acquisition costs that you can afford to pay. Then let's grow volume of acquisition. And then figure out, as you have more volume of spend or budget or plates spinning from a marketing activity perspective, from there, figure out where you can start shaving some efficiencies as well too. But don't start off with figuring out how low can we go kind of thing, because that's just a race to the bottom, right? That's a race to the 5% in market part of your TAM, and even probably smaller, because you're going to have to compete for a smaller and smaller percentage as you try to make things more efficient over time.
Yeah. 100%. I was just imagining a game of marketing limbo there. Kind of funny. How low can you go? Cool. So once you've kind of mapped out all the different stages, the next, I guess, important exercise is to actually reverse engineer what needs to be true to achieve that goal. So you can see here what we've got is I've taken this hypothetical scenario that we're aiming for 21 closed one. And based on the kind of dummy data that we were walking through earlier, that would mean 15% increase versus baseline for your website conversion rate. And so what we can then do is we can understand, okay, in order to increase that website conversion rate, what are the marketing needs that need to be true to do that? So focus area is going to be conversion rate optimization. You then realize you don't necessarily need more media spend to make that happen. But in terms of resources, you may need some additional resources. So you put there, as an example, we might need to hire a CRO specialist, or we might need to hire a CRO agency. Maybe we're going to put a demand generation manager on a CRO course or something like that. I think the importance of doing this reverse engineer your goal exercise is that you start understanding what are the various things that we can do to bring that to life. But it also allows us to get a little bit more laser focused. And again, we're not really, you know, throwing spaghetti at the wall here, being like, okay, I'm going to launch a LinkedIn organic thought leadership program, and I'm going to throw 200K on LinkedIn ads, and I'm going to try PMax on Google ads. You know, it's very targeted.
To your point, I see marketing as a portfolio of investments. There's no shortage of things that you can do. But if you're not willing to tell the other stakeholders on your team what you think the bets will pay off to be, then don't do them. Because now you're just confusing activity with being able to achieve the goal. And I think a lot of people fail doing that. And so having a specific thing where you mentioned, like, let's increase the website conversion rate from the 3 to the 3.45. To do so, we need a CRO specialist. And then to further, we need that CRO specialist or the person who's going to be in charge of it to tell us what they're going to test that they believe is going to get us that lift in conversion rate. That's a bet. And now we can talk about the next slide about like setting that goal, because a goal needs a KPI of where you're starting at and where your end goal is. And it needs a time component of that. Like, how long do you have to hit that goal as well?
Yeah, for sure. Because it's definitely not the case that you're just going to run one CRO experiment and then slowly you double your conversion rate. I mean, it can happen. I'm not going to say
it actually does happen, but you're right. Yeah. Let's not get people too excited.
Yeah, exactly. So what we've got here, this is the core, I would say, goal tracking framework we use at Client Boost. And it's not only one that we use for clients, but we're also drinking our own champagne. So this is also something that we use to measure our own marketing performance. So when I meet with JD once a week to tell him how we're performing as the Client Boost marketing team, we're using graphs exactly like this. So we understand how our own marketing is performing. But the real benefit here is because you're looking at the performance of the KPI over time and whether you are on track or off track to hit it, it can give you a really good sense check of whether the initial strategies or the initial bets that you've placed are actually working. And then you can see here, we've got this kind of idea of the safety zone and the idea of the danger zone. And this is important because if we're in this safety zone, it means that whatever we are doing is working, and we probably actually want to double down on that. So, you know, this is, again, another strong POV I have in marketing is I think a lot of B2Bs are always hyper-focused on how can we do more? How can we launch net new strategies? Where sometimes the best thing to do is just double down on what's already working. Like if you've got a strategy that you know slays, like try and squeeze as much value out of that strategy as you possibly can. And especially in these times when a lot of B2Bs are becoming more and more under-resourced, or they feel like they're pressed for time constantly. And on the flip side, when you see that you're in this danger zone, and again, it's not the case that if after the first 2 weeks we're in the danger zone, we start panicking and flip the strategy. But you know, if you get 2 months in and you've been in the danger zone for the whole time, that is a signal that there's a problem and we need to fix it. So it tells you that actually that initial bet that we placed was the wrong bet. And it's time to put our brains together and think about, okay, what's the next bet that we're actually going to place?
Mm-hmm. I love it. And we should come out with another episode too. Now I'm thinking about it, that if you have a, you know, closed one volume goal, a cost per acquisition goal, because those two things need to be in balance tied to your budget, and you're midway through the quarter, and what does the remaining of time need to be from a CAC perspective, for example, and a volume perspective for you to get to your end goal safely? And a lot of times, major aggressive pivots are needed. The further that red line is from the blue line, the further below it is, and for how long it's below it as well, too, for how many weeks continuously as well. And I think that would be a really important thing to say, oh, you know, moving forward, you actually now need to be at half your CAC than you were before because things didn't go as planned if you're still going to be able to want to achieve your goal by the end of the quarter.
Exactly. So okay, with that kind of final most important thing here, and I think this is something that definitely does not get talked about enough, and that's not setting and forgetting goals. So I think so many companies go on a massive goal setting spree at the beginning of the year. And, you know, it's already a mistake that the goal setting spree wasn't grounded in any sort of real world data or any sort of like achievability. And then on top of that, the goal is never actually getting revised at any point to reflect, you know, the most recent changes in the market, the most recent business objectives. We all know that the business objective at the beginning of the year is probably not going to be the same business objective at the end of the year. There's also other factors. Ad costs are going to do this throughout the year. And we have ad
like, what are ad costs going to do? I didn't see that. Sorry.
Yeah, they're going to do this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think, honestly, I think once per quarter is way too infrequent.
So I think once per quarter is the minimum that this should be done. If I'm being honest, it should really be done probably once per month. Like that's how dynamic ad markets are. That's how dynamic general markets are. And that's honestly how dynamic most businesses are, especially businesses that are in that kind of like startup / scaler era. The core business objective, the ICP can change, and just so many variable factors that need to be reassessed.
We internally at Client Boost, from a client perspective, do it weekly, and also internal, like you and I are working on this as well, do it weekly. And it doesn't mean that we're shifting gears on a weekly basis. We just like to get on the scale. It's almost like you have a personal trainer and see how you're pacing towards your goal as well too, and everything is in order of what it should be. And if we see too many weeks where, depending on the context of what we're doing, could be a faster turnaround time of impact, then we may want to pivot then and do something else as well too. But it really depends on the context. Like if it's a big rebrand exercise or website rebuild exercise or whatever it may be, you don't pivot that on a weekly basis. That's a project that can take longer time. So that's why that context is important.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one thing I would add here that I think will be such a hack for B2B marketers, and again, something that we do at Client Boost, both for clients and again, when we as the marketing team are presenting to JD and the directors, is that when it feels like a strategy isn't working and we need to pivot, I'll come to JD with what we call an ATF, which is an action plan and time frame, and say, okay, here's the new strategy. And then I'll put a number on that. I'll say based on like my best understanding of how our marketing is performing right now, here's what I think this strategy pivot will achieve. And here's the time frame that I think it's going to happen in. And what that allows us to do is that, again, we can just be very, very strategic with our resources and say, okay, based on the 10 different potential paths that we could take, it seems like, you know, X, Y, and Z are going to have the highest impact. So let's focus our resources there because we don't have the resources to do absolutely everything that we want to do. And to add to that, I think that's also a big problem that B2Bs have, is that they try and do everything and execute everything at a kind of C grade. And what that does is it makes everything perform not very well, whereas they would be much better off doing far fewer things and executing them at like an A plus grade.
Yeah. And it's funny because within KB, you know, we give autonomy, but that comes with some healthy pressure as well too, that you mentioned it as well, Patrick, like you have to come with some bets that you're pretty confident about. And if they're not going to turn out to be achieved, you're going to mention that to everybody else on the teams, right? Because we have a team sport kind of team effort going, and everybody has their own goals of trying to achieve as well too. So it creates this like do less, but do it better, and like, you know, make sure that you get that A plus grade and not do anything, you know, half-assed as well too.
Yeah, I love it. I've put this on a few of my LinkedIn posts, but definitely KB motto for 2025, definitely less but better. And I think a lot of B2Bs could learn a ton from that.
Totally. All right. So what are our key takeaways? We're at the end now.
Yes. So the first one and most important one, this is the hill I will die on. Arbitrary goal setting leads to failure and disappointment. So B2Bs really need to be grounding goals in data for success. And now that doesn't mean that you can't shoot for the stars, but it just does mean that you need to be very, very realistic about what you're trying to achieve. Otherwise, I think the risks are, you know, it's going to burn the teams out. It's going to cause friction between marketers and exec boards when you've kind of overpromised and underdelivered, or there just wasn't correct expectation setting that ever happened.
Yep. No, I love it. Excited for the follow-up episode on this too, giving you guys maybe a calculator to use as well too, but a great start that we do internally here that we just took you through in this episode. So hopefully you put it to good use. Thanks, y'all.